Good morning, everyone. I'm R.W. Estella with a word in Edgewise. Today is the 24th of March, the 83rd day of 2025, fortifying us with a synchronous 282 days with which to make our way to 2026. And for several days now, we have a new season as well, accompanied soon by what will likely be a humdinger of a mud season, in contrast to those of the past few years. This past week, two mallard couples arrived at the backyard slough that had filled up in the rain. The two males, of course, led the casual expedition, with the two females dutifully following, as everyone poked into the softening earth for tender new shoots. Outside at the edge of our patio, the beauty bush has been hosting cardinals, chickadees, and jays, much to the attention of our two Maine coons sitting inside, transfixed on windowsills while viewing the avian activity. Soon to be probing in the pending mud with their long, sensitive bills, Wilson's snipes are also arriving, along with American woodcocks. The former fill the air with sounds of chick and keek, and the latter with pinked. Some know the woodcock as a timberdoodle, a hokumpoke, a fiddle squeak, or a bog sucker. And speaking of bills, a new one has been proposed to Maine lawmakers by a state senator who says, according to the Bangor Daily News, that he aims to protect Maine's scenic beauty by requiring some form of barrier around large arrays of solar panels. Vegetative screens, such as a line of trees or bushes, have been suggested. Nonetheless, we might sense some subliminal hostility here, as if a field of solar panels is certainly contributing greater uglification to the general landscape than the ubiquitous and long-standing urban blight of power lines and poles. Oh, and how about how tolerable nuclear reactor stacks are? We are reminded of the spirit of birthday boy, poet, and publisher Lawrence Ferlinghetti, who announces, "I am awaiting, perpetually and forever, a renaissance of wonder," and bestows upon us his poem, "Don't Let That Horse," concerning Marc Chagall's 1933 painting, Equestrienne. "Don't let that horse eat that violin," cried Chagall's mother. But he kept right on painting and became famous and kept on painting the horse with violin in mouth. And when he finally finished it, he jumped up upon the horse and rode away, waving the violin, and then with a low bow gave it to the first naked nude he ran across, and there were no strings attached. The wonder Ferlinghetti speaks of is, of course, everywhere in Chagall's painting, the bare-breasted maiden in the red dress, for example, riding the white horse with the gray mane, the violin tucked under the chin of the horse's bowed head. Heavenward this morning and tomorrow morning in the southeast sky, about an hour before dawn, our waning crescent moon keeps company with the teapot asterism of the constellation Sagittarius the Archer. Today in 1603, King James VI of Scotland ascended the English throne as James I, following the death of Queen Elizabeth I. Today in 1837, Canada gave its black citizens the right to vote. Today in 1853, the anti-slavery newspaper, The Provincial Freeman, was first published in Windsor, Ontario, by the first black woman publisher in North America, Mary Ann Shadd. Today in 1944, more than 75 Allied prisoners undertook a daring escape from a POW camp in Sagen, Germany, which would inspire the 1963 movie The Great Escape. Today in 1945, Nat King Cole's King Cole Trio became the first record album to appear at number one on the Billboard magazine pop album chart. Today in 1989, the oil tanker Exxon Valdez ran aground, spilling at least 11 million gallons into Prince William Sound in Alaska and creating the largest oil spill in U.S. history up to that time. Today in 2002 at the Academy Awards, Denzel Washington and Halle Berry became the second and third African Americans to win Academy Awards for performances in leading roles. Hattie McDaniel had been the first, winning in 1940 for Best Supporting Actress in Gone with the Wind. Today in 1930 in Beech Grove, Indiana, Terrence William McQueen and his attractive 19-year-old wife, Julian, welcomed their new son, Steve, into the world, though Steve's father, Terrence, would soon abandon the family, as Steve would prove too much for his young, alcoholic mother, Julian, who brought Steve to stay with his great-granduncle, Claude Thompson, a kind, albeit reserved man who at least temporarily provided a stable home for the young boy. Unfortunately, before long, Julian insisted on reclaiming her son and dating a series of men who abused young Steve. Yet when she remarried, she considered Steve to be in the way, but instead of returning him to Uncle Claude, Julian sent her son to a home for wayward boys, essentially a reform school, where Steve began resembling a Dickensian character who was often left alone at the school whenever holidays occurred. Eventually, Julian again reclaimed her son, though this time moving to Greenwich Village, where Steve pursued his growing interest in acting, and despite the encumbrance of his alcoholic mother, he was finding success. His first movie lead was in the classic 1958 horror movie The Blob, and then his lead in the television series Wanted, Dead or Alive, made him a star. For many reasons, Steve McQueen became increasingly disgusted with his mother, but when she died in 1965, he felt great guilt over failing to reconcile with her. By then, he had already 2 years earlier played one of his best-remembered roles in The Great Escape. 3 years after his mother passed, he starred in Bullet, and for motorcycle aficionados, the 1971 motorcycle racing documentary Any Given Sunday will forever bring to mind Steve McQueen, a racer himself. Playwright and screenwriter Howard Koch said of Steve McQueen, "Early in his life, he developed a toughness and a calculated determination, first perhaps for survival, later for his professional ambition. And the arrogance which motivates some of his actions is mitigated by the charm of that quick half-smile which assures us that, at the bottom, he is a good guy." Today is also the birthday in 1681 of German Baroque composer and multi-instrumentalist Georg Philipp Telemann. In 1820, of American hymnist known as Queen of Gospel Songwriters, Fanny Crosby. In 1834, of American geologist and explorer, John Wesley Powell, and of English arts and crafts designer, craftsman and poet, William Morris. In 1855, of American banker, Andrew Mellon, and of South African writer, Olive Schreiner. In 1874, of Hungarian-American magician Harry Houdini. In 1887, of American actor Fatty Arbuckle. In 1898, of the first U.S. Coast Guard woman officer, Dorothy Stratton. In 1907, of the first female black aviator to hold a commercial pilot's license, Janie Harmon Bragg. In 1909, of American bank robber Clyde Barrow. In 1911, of American cartoonist Joseph Barbera. In 1912, of American civil rights and women's rights activist Dorothy Height. In 1919, of American beat poet and publisher Lawrence Ferlinghetti. In 1922, of American jazz singer King Pleasure. In 1924, of American R&B guitarist and singer-songwriter Boogie Bill Webb. In 1927, of German novelist Martin Walser. In 1932, of American actress Connie Hines. In 1935, of American bassist Carol Kay. And of English food writer Mary Berry. In 1936, of Canadian environmental scientist David Suzuki, of American R&B musician Don Covey, and of American jazz trumpeter Frederick Kaufman. In 1937, of American R&B singer Billy Stewart. In 1946, of German musician Klaus Dinger, and of Danish rock and soul harmonica player Lee Oscar in 1949, of British rock bassist Nick Lowe and of Canadian rock bassist Steve Lang, in 1951 of Scottish bassist Dougie Thompson and of American fashion designer Tommy Hilfiger, in 1954 of American actress Donna Pesco and of American actor Robert Carradine, in 1960 of American actress Kelly LeBrock and of German singer Nina, in 1970 of American actress Laura Flynn Boyle and of Irish Celtic pop rock violinist Sharon Corr. From Orono, Maine, I'm R.W. Estella with A Word in Edgewise, welcoming this first full week of spring and the 13th week of 2025.